This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 26, 2023. I'm Caleb Brown. So much of federal spending is now off budget. It doesn't go through a regular budgeting process, and that spending has contributed mightily to our current debt woes. Jonathan Bidlack of the R Street Institute discusses how to address it.
We would like the federal government, to the extent that it has the capacity to spend, that it can under dire circumstances. But broadly, we ought to be able to have expectations that the government spending will be regular, it will be normal, it will go through, perish the thought, a budget process. But so much of what has come to characterize a lot of government spending ought to be construed as emergency spending. We can argue about whether or not a lot of it was necessary, but understanding spending as normal and emergency is something that we're not really good at.
No, I mean, lawmakers tend to not want to plan maybe as much as they should. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of spending in recent years, the pandemic perhaps being the most obvious example where, you know, prior to the pandemic, no one really saw that coming. And then we proceeded to go and spend $5 trillion completely unexpectedly and completely off budget. You know, we've had many other things like this that have come up. I mean, the housing crisis back in, you know, 2008, 2009. Frankly, a lot of the war spending that we've had has been off budget, both in terms of the overseas contingency account, which previously existed. But, you know, if you go back to 2000 and you look at Congressional Budget Office, you know, projections as to what does the budget look like, it was surpluses as far as the eye could see. And when you ask yourself, well, why isn't that the case anymore? It's not actually because of what people oftentimes think, which is entitlement spending, for example, which I think we maybe like to talk about because it's easier to project and, you know, conceptualize.
But it's a disaster.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, no doubt we need to address entitlement spending. And it's certainly a very important factor in sort of our forward-looking projections. But when you ask yourself, why did the national debt balloon so dramatically from, you know, those CBO projections in 2000 to where we are today, a bigger part of the answer is actually all of the spending that wasn't expected. It was, you know, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It was, again, the financial crisis in 2008, 2009. It was hurricanes, natural disasters, things that we theoretically should plan for, but we still don't really do very effectively. And of course, most recently, it's you know, $5 trillion on the COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay, so what is the appropriate way of handling that spending relative to, again, what ought to be a normal annual budgeting process?
Sure. So, you know, far be it for me, I guess, to go in that quote Donald Rumsfeld, but of course, there's that whole line about, you know, known knowns and unknown knowns and so on. I think that framework is actually somewhat useful with what we're talking about. I mean, there are certain things that we know are going to happen. We just don't necessarily know the specific details about how or when they're going to happen. So, you know, we've saw obviously the disaster in Lahaina. You know, we saw hurricanes obviously occur on a relatively regular basis. So there are certain things that I think we should be planning much more effectively for, rather than essentially, you know, having, you know, Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Ian, Superstorm Sandy, and so on, and then saying, oh my gosh, you know, how could we have possibly foreseen this? We need a massive supplemental, you know, spending package. So I think that is one area that is ripe for reform. And then the other question is, you know, there are things like, again, pandemics or, you know, the housing crisis or so on, these kind of unexpected things that, you know, at least in budget world, no one, I think, was really thinking about ahead of time. And there are ways to deal with that, too. I mean, you know, at the state level, for example, we have rainy day funds. We have budget stabilization funds set up to allow states to weather these kinds of situations. And in fact, I mean, that was a big part of the story, a big part of the reason as to why the states were able to respond so effectively at the outset of the pandemic. It was because they had these sort of pools of cash available. You know, there are some efforts. Senator Braun from Indiana, for example, has introduced legislation to try to create a federal emergency fund, which I think is you know, it's not the be all end all solution, but it could very well be a useful addition. I think there are also a lot of lessons to be learned from other countries. I mean, you know, Places like Sweden and Switzerland, for example, which, of course, you know, many scholars at Cato and our street have written about ad nauseum, have more effective controls on their expenditures through fiscal rules that are actually flexible and able to deal with these kinds of unexpected events.
And to be clear, not small public sectors in those countries.
That's right. I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders maybe likes to talk a little bit about, Sweden as kind of this socialist paradise. But actually, as you know, the Swedish story in particular is interesting. I mean, they had an entitlement crisis that they went through in the 1990s, and they imposed more stringent fiscal controls. But the other part that's often not talked about in these places is that, you know, they are able to go and spend beyond what they otherwise, the rules might otherwise say they would be able to. They may have to cut spending in the future to account for that, but they have mechanisms in place to deal with unexpected events as well. And so I think that there's a need beyond sort of just, addressing things like hurricanes in a more targeted fashion. There's this broader issue where we really need to think holistically about how we budget at the federal level so that we can actually have not just regular budgets, but also put lawmakers in a position where the system is flexible enough so that we can deal with these things that we know are inevitably going to spring up. We, again, just don't necessarily know the details.
Yes, the notion of an emergency fund is useful at the family level and potentially at the federal government level. My concern about something like that is just, well, let's just redefine everything as an emergency in order to be able to raid this fund whenever we damn well please.
And that's the big risk. You know, I think that, we've talked so far about emergency spending, but there's the flip side of the coin, which is the expansion of emergency powers and how we kind of construe what actually is an emergency. I mean, I think we can all acknowledge that, you know, what happened in the pandemic, for example, was a very significant situation where there needed to be some sort of action, and we can debate about what that might have or should have looked like. But the reality is that increasingly lawmakers in Washington, in part because it's so hard to get things done via regular order and we have increased polarization and partisanship and so on, one of the easiest ways to try to have your priorities be advanced is to declare an emergency. And so, this is why we're seeing pushes, frankly, from both sides. I mean, you know, in the Trump administration, it was there's an emergency happening on the border. We need to take immediate action. On the left, we see, you know, there's a, whether we're talking about guns or we're talking about climate issues or whatever, right? There is a call, I think, to declare an emergency so that the federal government can take actions that are kind of unchecked. And so the other part of this is that, you know, we've obviously seen a massive expansion in emergency declarations. Again, we've seen other mechanisms like, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the overseas contingency account, where we basically created this offshoot so that we could get around budget caps and increase spending for national defense considerations abroad. There's the emergency power side of this, and there are a lot of reforms. You know, Mike Lee, for example, his Article I Act, or various efforts to go and maybe restrain a little bit how long emergencies can exist, or for example, create automatic terminations of emergency declarations, and then require Congress or the President, if they so want to continue to have there be an emergency, have to take affirmative action.
And you're saying this holistic approach. One thing that is notable about the Mike Lee Article I program is that war, the issue where we really ought to have an expiration or a vote of Congress before we continue these sort of things. So you're talking about holistically war and any other kind of unforeseen spending ought to be included, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Defense Production Act is another great example here where there's a need for reform, right? Where I think, again, we sort of we bestow these powers on the president, which, you know, arguably had a legitimate purpose when the DPA was originally implemented. But of course, it becomes tempting to go and expand those powers. And from a fiscal standpoint, when presidents have the ability to go and sort of engage in or create emergency environments or prolong them perhaps longer than they otherwise should have been, as we saw to some degree in the context of the pandemic, you create an environment that not only is ripe for potential abuse of power by executives, but it also tends to be an environment where Congress and the president can kind of work hand in hand to dramatically increase spending beyond what should have been or otherwise was proposed via the normal budgetary process.
Jonathan Bidlack directs the governance program at the R Street Institute. We spoke last month in Chicago. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily podcast wherever you please. And thank you for listening.